Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
The Thursday evening after a Wednesday night Champions League game where I don't feel utterly depressed and I don't feel like the next hour of the Huddle Breakdown is going to be picking apart the bones of yet another desolate Celtic performance in Europe. Celtic drew 2-2 with Atletico Madrid last night in the Champions League, going ahead twice in the game, only to be foiled by a Morata header at the back post to give Diego Simeone the last laugh as he ran up the tunnel, barely shaking Brendan Rodgers' hand after the game, as if Celtic's players had been messing around and diving around the pitch for the final 20 minutes. That wasn't the case. Celtic were very much trying to play football until the end of the game. And James, look, it's not too often after a Champions League game that I see you on Twitter saying you can't ask for a better performance than that. So I think most people will be delighted to start with that positive note, that it was just a Celtic performance in Europe that didn't embarrass ourselves. We didn't do any classic Celtic things like, you know, giving away stupid goals by passing it to the opposition in the 5-yard box. It was just a game where Celtic performed to the level they should be performing. And ultimately, other than they came up against a really good side that are better than them, they probably would have got the win last night.
Yeah, I think they look like they belonged in that game, which many times that hasn't been the case in recent years against that level of competition. And you watch that finish from Morata, you watch Griezmann move and control the ball, and you just, it's enjoyable watching that level of player all the time, but when they're playing within the context of that kind of game where they're, you know, it was cagey to a degree and they were both playing their style, relative styles, but they were going at each other. You know, this was a, you know, kind of a classic positively played Champions League group stage game. And I just thought it was a delight to watch. I mean, even a neutral, I could imagine, would have enjoyed it to a significant degree. And again, from my perspective, given all of the things that we've talked about for months now, as far as, you know, kind of talent limitations and, you know, squad state of the squad, I just for us to look like we belong against that team, who I thought played fine. Like, I don't think Atletico had an awful game or they played poorly. They didn't have any doozy mistakes. Like, it was two teams going at each other, doing it well, playing their style proficiently. And, you know, like I said, the fact that we look like we belonged at that level, or at least were, you know, very competitive at that level, I thought was refreshing. And, you know, kudos to all involved, because it was something else to behold.
Yeah, Alan, we'll probably leave the sort of the negatives of the game to
already end on in the podcast sake,
in terms of like what we could have done better and things like that. But I guess, like, you had James Horncastle on BT Sport or TNT, whatever you want to call it nowadays, saying that the first half from Celtic was the best bit of football he's seen from any side in the Champions League this season. And this game was different to the Feyenoord game, where Feyenoord played really badly and Celtic didn't capitalize. And it was different to the Lazio game where Lazio were playing for a draw and Celtic still somehow managed to lose this game. This was just a game where Celtic actually just played really well and got a lot of positive sort of outcomes from what they've been trying all year. The passing was crisp. The energy was good. The pressing was good. The passing was excellent for the first goal. The wingers stretched the game really well for the second goal. Like, there was a lot of really good stuff from Celtic, especially in that first half. And it just ultimately came down to running out of gas. That just seemed to be what was Celtic's downfall tonight. But overall, I'm not sure you can have many complaints after last night.
Not in terms of performance, for sure. And, you know, I think you said at the beginning about, you know, not wanting another sort of abject Celtic European night. Well, I don't think all three of them have been that. In fact, you know, I wasn't looking forward to this game. You know, this is a team who, you know, never mind can you beat them, you can even annoy them. It would be like problematic to do because they're such a difficult team to play against. You know, and they've got such belief, a culture, really, of being difficult to beat or even get at in any way. So this was always going to be a tough ask, but absolutely delighted with the performance. And actually, you know, it's been building. You know, as I say, Feyenoord was a masterclass. You say Feyenoord didn't play well. I say Celtic didn't let them play well until the sendings off opened the game up. Lazio was a lesson in the tiny margins that, you know, we talk about variance a lot on this, but sometimes it just comes down to luck. You know, football to a degree to which probably people who study the game are uncomfortable is more to do with luck than people would like to admit. And when it doesn't go your way, right, and then you're playing against good opposition, it's very difficult to combat that. And, you know, to be honest with you, you know, if you're a good side and you're creating lots of pressure and lots of moments, you're more likely to generate, you know, your fair share of luck. And although Celtic, you know, did have Madrid did have more shots, etc., higher XG and all that, a lot of that was down to a penalty, which we can get into. In all other respects, Celtic, as James said, looked like they belonged there. And we look like a good, well-organized, competitive side with some good players as well, which is great. So yeah, I thought it was a fantastic performance. A lot of credit to Brendan Rodgers. Just imagine what he could do if he had some good players to work with on top of the few that we've got.
Yeah, it's the age-old tale of damned if you do, damned if you don't. If Celtic play really badly and get tanked off the pitch, it always comes down to what's at his disposal, and now Celtic play really well and it's like, oh my god, well what could we do if he actually had some more talent in the door? And I think we will touch on that later on in the podcast. And we are live streaming tonight because we may as well on a Thursday night, who's at anything else other than watching some Europa League football. So get your comments in below and let us know your thoughts on the game. We will get to some of the comments, and there were some comments on Twitter as well that we will touch on before the end of the podcast as well. But I wanted to mention Matt O'Reilly before I do my usual 5-minute spiel about how Liam Scales is turning into a prime Maldini. I want to touch on Matt O'Reilly, Alan, because, I mean, he has been Celtic's standout performer throughout the course of this season so far. He's the top goal scorer in the SPFL. But this was really like a top-class Champions League-level performance from a midfielder. He, between his pass to open up the game for Kyogo's first goal, which was just immaculate, to some really good defensive work and positioning, like, he's turning into a real midfield general as well as being really, really tidy on the ball.
Yeah, I mean, he's not like McGregor probably was a couple of years ago, where he can dominate the ball and dominate the game. That's not the game that he's playing. He's finding ways to impact the game, and which means he's either trying to pop up in good positions on an attacking sense, and the goal was perfect, where he, you know, he did that thing that great number 10s do, where he let everybody run away from him, and he just took a step back on the edge of the box, and that just opened up the play. And, you know, Kyogo caused so much trouble that even Koke, who's, you know, a very experienced, exceptional player, as we saw last night, Koke got drawn to Kyogo And that left a nice, beautiful gap for Matt O'Reilly to slot it through. And like you say, then, you know, he's always looking for, where do I need to be defensively in transition? Where do I need to be to stop danger? And I think it's that combination, really, that effectiveness in all facets of the game that's turning him into that. Because I've not checked because it's still early in the season. I doubt he's dominating any particular all stats. Is the fact that, you know, he's a bit like, you know, peak Ryan Christie used to be. He's kind of in the top three of all the major stats across the board, you know, whether it's pressing, whether it's interceptions, whether it's breaking up play, whether it's packing, whether it's goal threat, whether it's assists. He's kind of there or thereabouts in the top three, top five of all of those things. So that's the kind of benefit he's now starting to bring. And, you know, with Kyogo scoring again, that's two goals now. Those two will undoubtedly be attracting interest for that level of performance.
Mm. James, do you want to come in on that?
Yeah, I'll throw a stat out there. So a couple stats that were emblematic, I think, of his performance. So he had the third highest amount of pressures behind. Guess who had the most pressures? And it's always better to
on
ask
the pitch
you,
or in general.
on the pitch,
like for Celtic.
The statistic, Celtic players
gotta be,
pressing.
It's got to be Dyson Maeda.
He was second. Bernardo had more pressures. Which I was surprised to see. Actually, it wasn't something that jumps out at you like Maeda.
If you look at his legs hanging off him after about 72 minutes, it's probably not that surprising.
Right, just, yeah.
55.
Yeah, incredible effort. O'Reilly was third. He was top in counter pressures. But interestingly enough, StatsBomb has a metric for duration per pressure, right? So how long are you engaged with the opposition player in that pressure action? And he was double Maeda and the other players on the counter pressure duration, and significantly higher, like maybe 30 to 40% higher on average versus Bernardo or Maeda on the pressure side. So again, that to me, that speaks to not only he was active, but the intensity was there. The output was there. I mean, that's to be able to do those things at a high level with duration, again, it speaks to the fact that our midfield in particular, and, you know, we can talk about what Bernardo's impact was defensively and how that may have contrasted with Hitate had he not come off, and how I thought our midfield actually, for the total of the game, held up pretty well, which again, and at this level, has been a major problem in the past, particularly in transition. So, I just wanted to throw that out there because I think it speaks to not only effort, but the quality of that effort that he was putting forth. And it's just been, you know, invaluable, not only on the creative side, scoring goals now, but in that ability to defend and press as well.
Yeah, like he's turned into a really top midfielder. And we may as well get into that midfield discussion because it is interesting that it was Bernardo who got the nod ahead of Awada, Alan, especially after the goal at the weekend. That's also the second time now that Bernardo has been taken on in front of Awada in midfield in the Champions League. And I did find that interesting that doesn't seem to be getting the nod too often in the SPFL, but he is getting the nod when it comes to European football. And I wonder, is that a style sort of thing that Brendan Rodgers is looking at here?
I don't know, because I haven't seen very much of him to tell you. Yeah. You know, so it was a surprise, for sure. Listen, let's start at the beginning. It looks like a hamstring injury, right? I'm kind of thinking, should players, Dumluck again, you can get unlucky, but should players be getting hamstring strains in the first 4 minutes of a game? I know for a fact last season there was a player, and I'm not going to say who it is, but who had a similar injury early in the game, and Celtic were furious because essentially they hadn't done their warm-up. You know, when they watched the video back, they hadn't done their warm-up properly, right? And I'm not saying that's what happened last night. I'm just saying that's a... that's a surprising, eye-opening thing to happen for your hamstring to go. You know, you can always get a knock, you can always get a twist, etc. in the first few minutes, but for a hamstring to go, that's a kind of stress injury. That's a getting tired, you know, type muscles or fatigue type injury. So, you know, that was a strange one. I'm sure, you know, there may be nothing in that. Hopefully there isn't anything in that. It was the first thing that kind of came to my mind. But only because, as I say, I know it happened one time last season. And then, you know, Bernardo coming on was also a surprise, but, you know, he kind of gave you everything. He's kind of like the anti-Hitati a little bit in that you got all the defensive stuff, all the kind of filling gaps, all the kind of off the ball stuff that you probably most people didn't notice, just being in the right place type of thing. The pressing was outrageous. He was neat and tidy on the ball. He wasn't trying to do anything particularly, fancy on the ball. And obviously, but you know, with Hitati, we missed some of these magic moments. We missed some of these killer through balls. We missed some of these extravagant passes, and we missed some of these ways that he finds little pockets of space in dangerous areas. So we didn't kind of get all of that magic stuff that happens occasionally, but we got a lot of graft, a lot of defensive solidity, a lot of sensible kind of passing, keeping of possession, recycling it, etc. And, you know, against Atletico Madrid, you don't want to give them a second, and you certainly don't want to get caught on the break. I mean, you know, Griezmann, I think we saw last night, you know, we've probably all seen Griezmann play many times in World Cups, European Championships and so forth. But I find I don't really take notice of players until they play Celtic, like I really take notice of him. And my goodness, I mean, the movement off the ball, the positions he took up, the control, the instant passing, just phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. Yeah. So listen, it was. I think Bernardo did himself proud. I mean, to say he's not even played, I think to last that long, I think the whole team was pretty much out on their feet from about the 50th to the 55th minute onwards, to be honest with you. And Bernardo in particular, I think was struggling. You can see it in his recovery runs. They're the anyone that's played the game knows they're the hardest ones to put the effort into, those recovery runs when the ball's ahead of you and you've got to get back and help, and you maybe, especially if you know that your team's just turned the ball over, etc. You could see that all the midfielders were labouring in that second half, but thankfully I think they seem to play in bursts. Atletico Madrid, if you look at the momentum bar, it's like sort of not very much happening, and then bang, there's like a sea of red where they suddenly seem to sort of change gear and really go at Celtic. And that's quite a difficult, you know, because I like James, I don't think they play, I hope they didn't play badly, because I'd be absolutely terrified to see them play really well. It seemed to me like they were playing badly, but I think we genuinely rattled them. I mean, one stat is that, you know, I think we forced them to lose the ball in their own third. Remember, I talked about this weekend in relation to Hearts. Now Hearts completely failed to do this. Well, it's, you know, we only lost the ball in our own final third about three times. 13 times we forced them to turn the ball over, which is a good, great effort. And that was a collective thing, and it was a pressing thing. And I think what was impressive about Celtic, not just Bernardo, was that pressing effort was sensible. It was triggered on the right moments. It wasn't just under Ange, it wasn't just like, right, we're going to do this constantly. And Madrid were the same. They picked their moments. They were a very, very well-drilled team. So, getting off the topic of Bernardo, back to him then. Yeah, I thought he was excellent. I thought he was excellent. And, if he does get a run in the team, which I hope, don't want Hitati to be out for any length of time, obviously, but if it means that someone gets a run in the team, it would be great to see the other side of his game, because I think in Scottish football, he'll get a chance to show the other aspects of his game, where I think he's got quite a lot in his makeup as far as creativity and even goal threat from what I've seen of his previous previous teams that he's played for.
Yeah, I thought it was exactly the type of performance you want from a 21-year-old who you're throwing into that type of game. It's like, okay, don't get indisciplined. Don't do what Holm did a couple of weeks ago and get yourself sent off. Just keep a cool head, do the simple things right, and then grow into the game. And I thought they did really well. I do agree with you. I think the team were just bollocks by the end of the game. I did note that, like, we're talking about Atletico and their performance, that I thought Celtic were quite sensible in many times during the game that they were walking. They slowed the game down to a walking pace and they started to keep the ball. And I thought, like, playing a team like Atletico, who aren't going to completely press you out of the game like a City or a Leipzig or whoever, they're not going to press you up high out in the pitch. It's more of a mid press that they put in that sort of suited Celtic to be ahead, and because it meant they could play the game at their pace. But they didn't have enough off the bench to continue that for the full 90 minutes. And then when you have, like you said, when you have a player like Griezmann, the way that he drops into the pocket to receive the ball, he just ghosts in, nobody notices he's there, and next thing he's like, he's got the perfect view of the entire pitch in front of him. So it is difficult. I think probably the tiredness is most shown in the second Atletico goal, where it's a 50-50 whether Greg Taylor presses him and he decides not to. It's a poor touch. It sort of drops in the middle of it. Greg Taylor's like, will I, won't I? He decides not to. He drops off and then allows him to get the cross in, which the defenders don't deal with. So it is a difficult decision. It's easy for us to sit here in our armchairs and say that he should have went for that ball, but it's not that easy when you're out on your feet and you're trying to make that decision in a split second. So I although the left back is a position we've constantly talked about improving, a better player might be fitter or might make it a better decision there, but I can't say I can be too critical of Greg Taylor in that situation. It's just one of those things that happens in those type of games and you get punished. So just before we move on to sort of the things that we might want to do a little bit different, word on Brendan Rodgers and the way he approached this game in the first half in particular. I thought they were really well set up, and the way that they were able to move the ball was really good. But I guess the main talking point, James, is the switch to three at the back to match up with Atletico after the game had sort of moved away from Celtic. Atletico were on top. Some people saying that when Atletico got the man sent off, that switch hindered Celtic, that they couldn't go for the game at that point because they had Nat Phillips playing right wing back. But then Celtic could well have lost that game as well. I think it was a game-saving decision from Rodgers to switch to three at the back instead of a decision that led to Celtic not winning the game.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you can't rigidly plan expecting an opposition of that level and quality to go a man down. So, you know, you're fortunate that it happened, but I was okay with it. Again, this is part of the good and the bad that we talk about with Rodgers relative to Ange's tenure, is that he's going to be more proactive and make some switches. And really, this is the first, you know, big call that he's made since his return. And so I didn't have an issue with it. Did it work? I mean, it was okay. It's so hard to decompose, like, or attribute the various factors because of the issue of fatigue, the decision-making process relative to what's available on the bench, particularly at that level, relative to experience even. Thought it was interesting that Forrest came on over O, for example, that kind of thing. That could have been, at least on the margins, something to do with experience and not being, you know, the risk of being overwhelmed in that environment. Potentially. So I have a hard time being critical of that. I don't think it cost this. I don't think it was something glaring. And the other part, you know, if I was going to be hypercritical, probably the way that the substitutions took place was less than ideal, meaning that we lost our flexibility by piecemealing it. With the three windows, we shot our wad. Even because ideally you probably don't want to have three center backs on. But once he had made that sub and there's no more left, no more windows left, you know, he kind of stuck with those personnel. So what are you going to do? I mean, you know, I think we were reasonable. And most importantly, Alan got his wish. We got the two strikers up top, which was the key with Kyogo and Maeda. I think the issues are bigger than that. Rodgers was the last thing we have to worry about in that game. Mm-hmm. I think it's a bit hypercritical to be picayune and you know, thinking that he got something horribly wrong. I think it's debatable. It's interesting debate, but I think it's tough to like have some kind of strong conviction that it was a bad decision.
What do you think, Alan?
Well, no, I was okay with it. I mean, the idea of having, you know, Maeda and Kyogo up front, you know, pulling the back three. I mean, the one good news, and we talked about, you know, the game beforehand, when I saw that Witzel was playing, I thought that's great. He's a really good player, clearly massively experienced, but he's another one who's, you know, not the quickest in what was already a relatively slow defence. So I was happy with that. Happy that we kind of did pull them out of shape a little bit, got in behind the fullbacks. Maeda, you know, he didn't run the guy ragged, but he got subbed at halftime because he was having a very uncomfortable time with it. So that's credit to him. You know, and we got in for the second goal on the other side as well. So I think we did some nice moments there. But, you know, it just seems we just don't have enough resources, and you have to have that. If you're going to pull off a victory against a team like this, it's got to be a 90-minute level of intensity. I mean, that first half was absolutely brilliant. I was, you know, not just the way that we pressed them, not just the two things really that impressed me most about the first half. One was the response to the equaliser, because the equaliser was a classic Celtic goal to use and you'd lose in Europe. Yeah. And the response to that was absolutely terrific. And then the second thing was, you know, there was 5 minutes added on at the end of the first half. And I was just thinking, okay, well, I know what's going on. And, you know, we actually managed that last 10 minutes of the first half really, really well. I was thinking, this is pretty smart. Now, they obviously got a rocket. Two subs came on. I think Llorente changed the game, actually, because he drove at Celtic at real extreme pace. And that's what, you know, led to directly to the equaliser. And he'd had a couple of runs before that as well. And just that, again, that athleticism, that pace coming from midfield. We hadn't seen any of that from Sol. I mean, Koke's brilliant on the ball, but he's not going to run at you. Rodrigo De Paul, again, is a tidy, all action sort of player, but again, he's not going to sort of drive from midfield like Llorente did. So that was a smart move by Simeone, and that made a huge difference to claw the game back. But I was surprised a little bit that once they'd got back to 2-2, they didn't seem to want to over commit either. I think we were hanging on a bit in the 75th minute. We were really, you know, we were kind of backs to the wall without them creating an awful lot. They looked quite happy to have the ball, but then it kind of petered out. But I don't think the 5-3-2, 3-5-2 was, whether he felt that was his only choice, whether he just felt that was the best way to shore it up and let's not lose this because that would be devastating to have played well again and not get anything from the game again. Maybe there's a little bit of that. I was a bit surprised that we didn't kind of go for it a little bit more. Even throwing O on for Maeda, who was, you know, tired as well, really. Putting another body in midfield, a fresh body in midfield, anybody really, because Bernardo would run himself into the ground, O'Reilly was struggling, and McGregor, they're all struggling. So whether that was Rodgers, whether it was just a kind of, maybe it was a mistake, right? Maybe it was a miscalculation of the three subs thing. Maybe they'd forgotten that Hatate, after 4 minutes, they thought they had one sub rotation left. Or maybe it's Rodgers you're making a statement about what he thinks about the squad. Thing is, both of those things could be true. Either of those things could be true. It could have been a mistake. It could have been Rodgers being playing clever buggers. So but I'm glad we hang on. I'm glad we got a point. As I say, for that level of opposition, for the nature of the team that they are, that was a terrific achievement, because there's an enormous gulf. I mean, it's probably not far off like St Johnstone getting a 2-2 Celtic Park, to be honest with you. You know, the way that they would look at that. We went about it a different way. I think, you know, I see that first half was terrific. But, you know, it's that level of gulf really between the teams.
Yeah. We don't need to do a state of the nation type thing here when we're talking about the squad, because we've done that enough so far this season, and I think most people have heard enough about that. But let's just talk about the bench for 1 second, because that is probably the most interesting thing about this game, is who was brought on, why were they brought on, who wasn't brought on. And a lot of the sort of post-match reaction to this game was that Celtic just didn't have enough off the bench, that Rodgers didn't trust the players off the bench. And I think What I will like to do is look at the bench from last year's Champions League and look at the bench from this year's Champions League. So I picked out the 2-0 loss against Leipzig. On the bench that night for Celtic was Giakoumakis, Aaron Moy, David Turnbull, Bernabe, James Forrest. Those are the five subs that Celtic made. They also had McCarthy, Abel Gard, Segrist, Bain, Scott Robertson, Anthony Alston, Stephen Welsh. Last night, Celtic's bench was Nat Phillips, Paolo Bernardo, James Forrest. Those were the three subs made. They had Gustav Lagerbielke, Hyun Young-Yang, David Turnbull again, Hyung-Gu Oh, Tomoki Iwata, Scott Bain, Joe Morrison, Anthony Nelson, Mikey Johnson. So, I mean, David Turnbull's was on the bench last year. James Forrest was on the bench last year. Scott Bain was on the bench last year. Like, outside of Giakoumakis and Aaron Moy, there's an argument to be made that Celtic did not have that much off the bench last year in comparison to this year. Like, I know there's a big gulf between Paolo Bernardo and Aaron Moy, I will admit that. And the fact that O didn't come on last night, that says that there might be a gulf between Giakoumakis and O. But I'm just not buying the idea that Celtic are, like, you know, 60%, 70% worse than last year. I think Celtic are just generally not very well prepared as a club. I think that's just the way it is. But you have the likes of Chris Sutton tweeting last night saying Giakoumakis.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Giakoumakis would have came on and really did it, had an impact on that game last night. Like, James, I just don't buy into this narrative that's starting to build that Giakoumakis would have impacted that game as much as people might have think. Like, Giakoumakis was terrible in the Champions League last year. Like, he did not have an impact in European football for Celtic. He scored a lot of goals off the bench in the SPFL and was a really good player when he had to replace Kyogo through injury. But I'm just, Celtic don't win that game because Giakoumakis comes on. I just don't buy it.
Yeah, I didn't think the way that in which we were going to, and we ultimately did create our chances against them, which were magnificent. You know, each of them in their own way. Giakoumakis does not likely make that run and have that connecting sequence of play for the first goal that Kyogo scores, right? I mean, he's basically a 12-yard and in striker who has to get service, and, you know, has been a good finisher. He continued that at Atlanta, where they've I forget the guy's Almira, who's their attacking midfielder, who's a very creative guy who's, you know, has created quite a bit for Giakoumakis. I don't see a scenario in which we were going to be having a creative input to get the ball to him in a central location where he was going to finish, and particularly doing it against those two center backs. or three center backs, actually, who I thought actually, you know, in that kind of compact defensive scenario, I mean, they were really good. Their issues is when we pulled them out, as we talked about heading into the game, is a hope that we might be able to get some joy with Maeda and Kyogo doing that. I don't see, I mean, this, you know, the idea that he would provide an out ball. I mean, again, this at that level, he just hasn't shown a skill set at doing that. I mean, it's been as bad as it has been good as far as him retaining possession and redistributing. I count me as skeptical that he would have made a material impact in that kind of game.
Mm. Alan, I think probably most disappointing for me is that Celtic lacked pace, and Chill Phil is getting involved in the comments saying that Gigi would have given Celtic a different option in the second half. But I think the different option that Celtic needed wasn't a big man to kick the ball up to and try to get an out ball. That way, I think it was pacing behind the defenders is what Celtic needed. And I was surprised that Yang didn't get the nod. That's probably what disappointed me last night, was that when it was 10 men, that we literally had no ball runners at all on the pitch, except for James Forrest, who's, you know, 45.
Yeah, we definitely have not. Jota didn't have blistering pace, but as we've talked about, he compensated for that with his control, his technique, and his ability to manufacture space. And that's you know, we're hoping that Luis Palma, will have something similar. He doesn't look to be on anywhere near Jota's level yet, but if he can at least compensate by, you know, just dropping a shoulder. There's plenty of examples of wingers over the years who haven't had blistering pace, who use skill and just the dropping of the shoulder or just to get half a yard. It's all you need to whip a ball in or to get a shot away, etc. So it isn't the be all and end all, but it was going to be discomforting them, and we didn't have seem to have any to bring on. On the, you know, Forrest clearly is not the player he was as far as speed. As you say, Yang looks like he's reasonably quick, but I think they thought he was rapid based on the, you know, the K League, but the K League's, you know, not even J League standard, and therefore, you know, it doesn't necessarily translate to what is quite a physical league. You know, the Giacomakis thing, we just need to kind of knock on the head a little bit. As James said, you know, great stats, mainly. Let's be honest, mainly as a flat track bully and mainly as a player that came on late in games against teams that were potentially already beaten and did a lot of stat padding, especially in that second season. In the first season, you know, he did kind of grow into the role well. I know he did score one goal in the Champions League, but yeah, I mean, the sort of striker that the likes of Savic and Hermoso and, you know, are just not going to worry about, to be honest with you. So I was okay with it being, you know, hopefully small and quick. But yeah, I think we just need more. We just need better quality, really. I mean, the other aspect of it is, why would Giacomakis didn't want at the age of 27, 28 to sit on the bench and come on for 30 minutes and, you know, pad some stats out and win some Scottish League titles. He wanted something more and something different, and fair play to him. And not many players would be willing to play that role when they're that age. Now, and O would be, because he's learning the game and this is his chance to be exposed to Champions League level. So I'm kind of disappointed he didn't come on, because I think he's actually probably, I would argue, he's slightly ahead of where Giacomakis was, if you want to make that comparison, at the same age. But we're just not really seeing him getting a lot of minutes. And therefore, we can only surmise that perhaps, you know, the manager doesn't feel that he's capable of making a difference at this stage. And that seemed to be the case for me of a lot of the players last night, which is a shame.
Jay Mather is asking, where is Tilio? Tilio isn't in Celtic's Champions League squad, so he wouldn't have been able to be picked for the game. But he's also, I think he's still injured, isn't he?
He's. I think he's back in training, but Rogers made some alarming's too strong of a word, but comments that I saw that were surprising, given kind of the reputation of Tilio coming in, and basically Rogers. I'm paraphrasing, but Rogers was saying that he was struggling with adjusting to kind of the pace of play, the rapidity of. of the combat, so to speak, at Celtic level. So you know, maybe that part of that's because he is returning from a significant injury, and it'll just take him time to ramp up. But it doesn't sound like he was, you know, on the cusp of returning in a competitive way and competing for the first team, which obviously is a little disappointing because, I mean, I think that was the hope was that he was going to be kind of the latent, you know, creative replacement for Jota, or at least, you know, contribute to that.
Mm-hmm. There goes my prediction, but listen, can't get them all right. Can't get them all right. What I did get right was Liam Scales, and I called it 2 years before everybody else. So, I mean, everybody's on the train now. Everybody's on the train now. I've been driving it for the last 2 years. Nobody wanted to listen. But listen, look, I think overall, apart from the overarching themes, which we've nagged on about for a long time on this podcast in terms of the squad itself, I think the overall feeling is positive after last night for sure. One question that came in from Mo on Twitter beforehand was that Roger said that it's a young squad, that they're a young team that are still learning at this level. So I did a little bit of digging, and Celtic's overall squad so far in the Champions League has an average age of 26. In terms of the Champions League this year, Salzburg, no surprise here, are the youngest squad in the Champions League this year. 21.5 is the average age, but that, I mean, that adds up with the way that Salzburg go about business. Feyenoord are the next with 24.3 as their youngest. The oldest squads are Sevilla, who have an average age of 31. Atletico Madrid are next at 30.5. Lazio, Galatasaray, Inter Milan, the sides that you expect to have older sides have older sides, the sides that you expect to have younger sides, Celtic fall somewhere in the middle. But I suppose, Alan, when you think about this, young and experience is different, because you can be young with experience and you can be 26 with absolutely no experience. And I think Celtic are a young side when it comes to the Champions League, because none of these players have any European level experience except for Cal McGregor and Joe Hart. And some of these players who came through the Japanese system are in their like third or fourth year of professional football, despite the fact that they're 25, 26 years old. So they are young-ish, but they're not experienced. And I think that's when you see the likes of it, this really bugged me, and I will say this bugged me despite having a really good half. With 5 minutes left to go until halftime, winning the game, Celtic were still taking quick throw-ins and still passing the ball quick and still going up, trying to get forward, and you're just slow the game down. Stop what you're doing and slow the game. Do what Atletico are doing. Do what Griezmann did. Fake a head injury if you need to. Just slow the game down and get into halftime with the lead. It is little things like that that lose you games. Eventually they do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that was a bit surprising, but we kind of got away with it. Yeah, that aspect of it. But listen, how are you going to learn at Champions League level if you don't play the games, right? Which is another reason why it's surprising you don't use all five subs, because that's basically two players last night that could have got Champions League minutes potentially that didn't, and therefore banked that experience for what it's worth. You know, even if it's seeing out a game or chasing a game against 10 players as it could have been last night, you know, why wouldn't you give them that sort of experience, really? Listen, you don't get many games, right? You get six games a season, and things happened in Feyenoord, where you go down to nine players, and essentially, what are you going to learn from that other than backs to the wall, etc.? So, as I've said before, it can take years for a team to learn how to play in the Champions League, to learn how to manage games better, like you were saying last night, seeing out that first half in a more measured way, recognizing that they were getting frustrated, perhaps even starting off the second half in a really sort of cynical kind of way, diving all over the place and just really getting them wound up and negating the fact that they've had a rocket and they're starting at 100 miles an hour. Recognizing those signs, reading the momentum of games, they're all experience factors, but you only get it from playing. If you're Celtic, you're only playing, say, at the moment, six games a year, and then you're out. And then you're changing a chunk of the squad. So it's going to take time. Rodgers has got that experience. He's had a few campaigns now in the Champions League. He's led Leicester to be competing at the top of the English Premier League for three seasons, actually out of four, and he's taken a team to the semi-final of a European competition. You know, so he's there to impart that as best as he can, but he needs the players that are capable, because it's all very well having someone with a great attitude, but if they're not actually capable of performing at that level. I mean, and again, hate to mention it, but, you know, I kind of disagree with you about both goals, actually. To me, they're both on Greg Taylor, because a quicker, more, not him personally in the sense of, you know, he was just being Greg Taylor, but a quicker, more athletic left back, A, doesn't get caught momentarily wrong side of the defender, and B, is more decisive in coming out and closing Llorente down. But Taylor knew he couldn't make it because he's just not quick enough. No harm to the kid. He was probably a sensible move, right? But, you know, both what good is it going to do in that situation? You know, Greg Taylor's hugely experienced, but if he's simply not good enough for that level, what are you going to do? So we're still at the first goal. I know you don't want to get into it, but we're still at that place where, yeah, great, learn, you know, all that. But it's really simple. You need to get better players in to compete at that level. It's as simple as that.
The first goal, I'm not letting him away with it. But although I've never seen a referee blow the whistle for a penalty while the player's still midair. Like, I've never seen a decision like that given so quickly. But
the other aspect of it is, and again, this is where I thought we were getting, oh, here we go again, was that if you remember the Hitati against Kilmarnock the other week, where he put his leg in front of the Kilmarnock player and almost forced him to foul him, it was a bit like that. It was a little bit like that. But I think because Taylor actually does kick into him, because the guy's just in front of Taylor, he probably feels he's entitled to do that. So I think that's probably the difference, to be fair.
Well, I think that's the difference between the levels as well, is that these players know how to maneuver their bodies in such a way that they get themselves in those positions. And that's the difference between a high level left back and what Greg Taylor is at the minute. He's a decent left back, but a better left back doesn't allow the player to do that. The first goal, I'm not letting him away. I do think, you know, a better left back does better there. And again, a better left back probably does better with the second goal. But the reason I'm sort of letting him away with a little bit, or at least trying to understand where he was coming from, is that he was damned if he did, damned if he didn't, because he was bollocks. And if he went for that ball, I think he loses it, and the man does him anyway. And if he doesn't go for it, the man did him. So I think I think Greg Taylor was losing that duel, no matter whether he went for the ball or not.
You take everything. You take everything at that point.
Yeah, I mean, if he goes in and tries to close him down, he gets absolutely smoked. There's no question about that. So, yeah, and again, it took a really good cross and a brilliant finish, I mean, for that to be a goal. So, was it a catastrophic error by Taylor? I'd say, again, given the circumstances, no. Yeah, I mean, it's like,
no,
it's just tough.
But again, we're back to tiny margins, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we want to turn a plucky draw against Atletico Madrid into beating them. These are the things that we have to improve on. That's why we're mentioning it, right? We're not trying to pick holes in people. It's like, what takes us forward? That's always the mindset here in terms of the way we look at this.
Yeah, well, and the penalty save as well, like marginal. It doesn't drop back there. Like, you know,
well, if he doesn't touch it, or if he just hit the post, then, you know, Griezmann can't score. It's like, it was so unlucky for Joe Hart. It was a great save because it was fingertips, right? So, you know, yeah. But to be fair, we got a little bit of luck as well, you know. So, you know, Maeda was a fraction onside. They scored from a free kick. That was literally a butt cheek, as James would say, literally a butt cheek offside. You know, saving us from Witzel scoring in the front. So we got those little breaks.
Also, Greg Taylor.
I would say the game in terms of the luck, it evened itself out over the piece, and we got a draw. So that's all fair.
Well, and let's. I'm going to eat some crow because there is some an homage here to pay to Enda's buddy, and I'm going to introduce you guys. I haven't made one of my cross sports references in a while. So Enda, there was this guy named Wally Pipp, who was one of the great power hitters of what they call the dead ball era in baseball back in the early 20th century. So they had, before 1920, when Babe Ruth revolutionized baseball, they played with a softer ball, so they didn't hit as many home runs. So it was more slapping the ball and that kind of stuff. Well, Pip was one of the big power hitters of that time, and he was succeeded. He came to the ballpark in 1925 as a New York Yankee with a headache, and he decided he wasn't going to play that day. And a guy named Lou Gehrig got the chance to start that day and proceeded to play for 2,400 and some games straight. You may have heard of the Lou Gehrig's disease, right?
Yeah, I've heard of it.
So that Lou Gehrig. So it's actually a verb in American sports that when a starting player loses their job because of injury, they got Wally Pipped. And I think that's the aspirational upside for Liam Scales, is that he ended up Wally Pipping these guys at Celtic, and that he got his chance. He's seizing on it. And you know what? Until something else happens, it's his job.
Yeah,
and I'm eating my crow.
It's incredible. Like it genuinely is. It is incredible that this guy who was definitely wouldn't have been at the club had it not been for injuries, has come in, and he has been like really good, and it just gets better with every game, gets more confident. His distribution's really good. He's starting to quicken up a little bit, and even just his positioning as well is getting much better.
Oh, and that close down on Griezmann was brilliant. I mean, that was a brilliant defensive play.
That was noticeable last night. He just moved and he moved the ball a little bit quicker. He was just a little bit quicker on his feet, more nimble, which is great to see. He's still got, I mean, the first play of the game, he got caught under the ball, but anyway, again, and then he gave the ball away straight in the middle of the pitch, which I think led to a shot in the second half, which it's like won a game. So listen, he's having said all that, I thought he was absolutely terrific overall, and just the composure of him, the fact that I've not watched, obviously generally watching Scotland games when the international break is on, so I've not seen any of the Ireland games, but he's played four internationals, something like that.
Last two,
right? Okay, and by all accounts, he seems to have done well. I just wonder what impact that's had on him, because I mean, that, you know, to be a start to become a established international player must give him a huge confidence boost. Even if it's not in a particularly stellar Ireland team, it's still. Because I'm just thinking, for example, Ralston. I mean, Ralston did get called up to the Scotland team, but he never really looked like he was going to, you know, become a regular. Particularly, he filled in well a couple of games, very well actually. So I'm kind of with Scales. I'm kind of where my head's at. Is this his Ralston moment when he gets in the team, he becomes the absolute best version of Liam Scales he can possibly be. He becomes a cult hero, but as soon as somebody better comes along, that's pretty much it, and then you probably don't see him that much again. Or is this actually a transformational? Is he actually going to blossom into and mature into a reliable, kind of consistent player? Fascinated to see. I don't know the answer to that, but at the moment, my money's on the Ralston scenario, but I'm happy to if I'm wrong as well.
Well, like the thing about it is, 5 years ago, he was playing for the worst team in the League of Ireland. The UCD, they're a college side. So basically, their model is they get college students who are there for 4 years or whatever. They play in the League of Ireland. If they're in the First Division or they're in the First Division, or if they're in the Premier Division, they all play. And then when the players are graduated, they can't play for them anymore. So they're generally the worst team because they're the youngest and they lose all their best players at the end of their college degree. So 5 years ago, he was playing for them. And then he got a move to Shamrock Rovers, who are the best team in the league. And he made the step up there and became an established starter. Took him a little while, but he became an established starter within the team. Took a little bit of luck, a few injuries here or there as well. And then he gets this move to Celtic, and it doesn't quite work out, but then eventually gets a chance and he takes it as well. So I think what we're seeing here is, and it's one of my favorite aspects of football, is watching a player step up to the level that he's playing at. And people just think it's an automatic thing where you go to a higher level above and you play to the same level you were playing below. It might just take a little while for you to adjust to the pace of the game, the physicality of it, the general quickness of it. But I like to see a player who continuously adapts to the level that they're playing at. And I think that's what Liam Scales has finally been able to do. And I think that's the best players do that. You know, they're able to make that step up eventually. Now, maybe it is just form. Maybe it is just confidence. But I think with Brendan Rodgers coaching, this is what I was trying to say at the start of the season. Football is not a linear game. People can be terrible at the start of the season and end the season being one of the best players in the league. It's not a linear game. Liam Scales in a month's time could be Celtic's worst player, but he could continuously still be developing at that point and be even better than he is now. It's just one of these things. Football changes. So that's why I'm very slow to rule players out.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, like you say, because of his background and where he's played, he's not had, unlike, say, young players in Scotland, he's not had 3 or 4 or 5 years of playing at this level and playing with players and training at this level. And actually, some people find it easier. And that sounds odd, but some people find it easier to play when you don't have to think as much and you get less time on the ball. So listen, you know, we've had two scenarios that we've had at Celtic in the last sort of few years. We've had the Anthony Robson one, which is where my money's on, and we've had the Ryan Christie one, where, again, a young player done well at, you know, smaller clubs, being on loan at Aberdeen, as Scales was, and then really burst, came back, didn't get in the team, and you wondered what was going to happen to him, and then suddenly burst onto the scene. So, you know, will he be another Ryan Christie? I'd be absolutely delighted if he does, and then he'll go and play in the Premier League for, get earn millions of pounds one day, and good luck to him. Let's hope he does that.
And he's 25 now, so this should be him peaking. And I think we're seeing that. So maybe it is just a simple case of experience at a certain level. Who knows? But God, it's thrilling to watch an Irish player actually play well at the highest level. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, he was terrific. He was terrific.
Especially when they look as Irish as Liam Scales does, because like it's like a guy in America drew him.
I was going to say he looks permanently confused. Now you've made me sound like racist or something. That was it always looks like he's like, what am I doing here again? Why am I here?
Anything else before we finish up for the show for this week?
No, I'm good. I just rejoice. The obviously the big caveat is wouldn't have been nice to get the 3 points, but
yeah.
Even if we had gotten those 3 points, I think the realistic likelihood of us progressing out of the group is not great. The idea that the things that we thought were the major strengths that could lead to progress over time, I think, you know, yesterday was a validation of that. And then we come back to upgrading the squad, and that, if we continue down this path, then I think there's a lot to be optimistic about heading into next season's European campaign.
Alan?
Yeah, I mean, we're asking players like O'Reilly, 22 now, isn't he? And, you know, Hatate, to help us beat teams like Athletic Madrid. They're two best players, right? Koke and Griezmann, who both of them were absolutely terrific. And, you know, Koke's 31, Griezmann's 32, right? That's a lot of experience gained. They've played in a lot of big international tournaments to be playing at that level in the Champions League now and on a consistent basis. And we're asking people to do it when they're probably 10 years younger than that. So I guess we have to bear that in mind, as well when we're being critical. So that's just another thought that I had.
Looking at the table, like, I think it's all to play for, especially for the Europa League at this point in time, and that should be the realistic game for Celtic. We should not be disappointed with not getting through this group and ending up in the Europa League. I think that's a good result from Celtic with a group stage with Feyenoord and Atletico Madrid and Lazio, because they're three decent sides. The way that the draw has fallen for Celtic, I think, is favourable in that you can maybe potentially rule out a big result against Atletico at home, because Atletico are beasts when it comes to their home form. Lazio, Celtic have gotten results at Lazio before when they needed them. And Feyenoord at home, if Feyenoord play the way that Celtic played against them in the first leg at home, I think Celtic are more mature since that first game even still. So I think it's all to play for at this point in time in the Champions League. Might even scrape in at second place. Who knows? But I think Europa League is a good result.
You have to watch Feyenoord with their two fit strikers now. They're a whole different kettle of fish with Jimenez fit and firing. So I'm not, you know, I generally agree that Lazio does not scare me at all. I mean, I said that going into the group. I mean, they're not very good relative to this level. I mean, I think having watched, you know, a fair bit, I mean, they're, I would say, in the bottom half of the pot four quality as far as teams go, as far as, you know, it's like how good they are as a team this season, from what I've seen. And, you know, so getting a result, well, okay, we need a win. I mean, that's the problem here. I mean, it's just a matter of points. And that'll be the big one. We kind of have to win in Lazio, I think, to have a reasonable shot and maybe kind of scratch out a draw. I mean, I would be thrilled with a draw against Feyenoord based off of how good Feyenoord are and how good they're playing. But yeah, I don't give up, but I, you know, it's going to be a tall.
The best scenario I can think of is that, so Lazio are on 4 points, aren't they? I think, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think we have to beat Lazio. We have to. Okay. It's as simple as that. We have to beat Lazio. And then if we get 1 point from the other two games and end up on 5 points, I could see them losing the last three and we could scrape that third place. I think that's, to me, that's the sunniest scenario I can think of, to be honest. But who knows, twists and turns and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. Radio, that's where we shall leave the podcast for this week. Celtic have a big game against Hibs away this weekend as well as the SPFL continues. So we'll be back again next week to look at that game. If you want to get this podcast, it's available on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter at Huddle Breakdown, and you can subscribe to the channel if you're not subscribed already so that you can get all the videos every single week. Thanks to James, thanks to Alan, and thanks to everybody who has commented under this video as well. The full video will be available in full on our channel after this video is done. So we shall chat to you next week after the Hibs game. Enjoy the game at the weekend, guys, and we'll chat to you later. Good luck.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.